Welcome back to the Bright Lights of Broadway. This is The Cosmic Curtain, the official podcast of Cosmic Circus Broadway. I'm Brian Kitson, head writer over the Cosmic Circus and Cosmic Circus Broadway. And joining me, as always, is my co-host and fellow backseat babe, RJ Miller Zelenko. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
I would ask you how you're doing, but if anybody listened to Wicked, they'll know. It's cold, it's wet, it's rainy, and we're here to talk about Mean Girls the Musical, which is currently in at the Fisher Theater as a part of the Broadway in Detroit's bonus shows. So we're very excited to break this down. Obviously, spoiler warning, if you have not seen Mean Girls at all, the original movie, if you have not seen the musical that came out a year ago, if you have not seen the touring show, I can't help you. I'm so sorry. Why are you here? No, I'm just kidding. We love you. So we're just going to jump right in. RJ, what is your experience with Mean Girls up to this point? What is your general knowledge? When did you begin this journey? Where you're wearing pink, so you know that much.
I know that much. It is Wednesday. We wear pink.
We do.
Somebody didn't get the memo.
But I couldn't wear pink too because then we would match. Is that not what?
It's true. It's true. It's fine. You just can't sit with us.
Oh, burn. Okay.
My time with the show, very limited. I'll be honest with you. Time with the show, time with the movie, time with literally anything Mean Girls, fairly limited. I think I maybe saw the movie one time ever, and I was probably like half watching it. Like, it was one of those things that I was probably at a sleepover and someone was like, let's turn on Mean Girls. And it was like 2:30 in the morning and we had already watched everything else and we're basically going to bed. So I'm not the most familiar. You probably maybe outdo me in this regard.
You mean you didn't watch this multiple times through your adolescence? This wasn't like a staple in your... There used to be a running joke, you know, in my friends group that Mean Girls was a staple in every girl's formative years and Brian's, because I watched this film so much. And that was just kind of the running gag because I knew this film backwards and forwards. I had seen it so many times. This was one that my friends and I would just quote. And I still will sometimes quote this film in normal day. Like, I'm doing therapy and I will throw in a Mean Girls quote. So, like, the fact that you were just like, I've seen it like once maybe when I was falling asleep at a party just feels, I don't know, it feels wrong. You can't sit with us, sir.
I mean, it is a little bit shocking because I was obsessed, although clearly not enough, with Lindsay Lohan.
Okay.
So, but
as you should
fair,
be, Lindsay Lohan is fantastic.
I don't think I knew that she was even in this film because I was too busy, you know, watching like The Parent Trap and Herbie Fully Loaded. And what is it? Confessions of a Teenage
Drama Queen.
Yeah. So
the Disney movies, not the quite the adult Lindsay Lohan.
Correct. Yeah, like it must have broken off once she hit her teen years or something, or I was just so behind that I never actually followed it.
Fun fact, I'm going to have to look it up. I'm pretty sure Mean Girls came out before Herbie Fully Loaded, so I'm going to go ahead and just say that you missed it somewhere, and that's fine, because you can just... Herbie Fully Loaded is a fantastic film. Freaky Friday? Come on. That's also classic.
I was obsessed with Freaky Friday. There was that.
So it was Freaky Friday,
and
Mean Girls.
Curtis. Yeah.
And there's a Freakier Friday coming out. I digress, but... Mean Girls was smack dab in the middle between Freaky Friday and Herbie Fully Loaded, so you just missed that one, which, am I shocked? I was shocked for a moment, but maybe I'm not actually that shocked that you wouldn't see that one, because this is a kind of an adult-ish, like an adolescent adult film, you know?
Well, and given my personality, particularly in my like high school days, I will say, like, from middle school through college, I went to a private Christian institution. And so, like, they weren't all watching Mean Girls. Often, anything with any type of connotation wasn't even allowed, right? So, it, unless I was at a friend's house, there was no way that I would be exposed to this film.
So chances are you've never seen Bring It On until you were an adult either, then. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct.
Okay, well, we got to focus on Mean Girls, but that hurt just a little bit. So you have, you didn't have a great store of Mean Girls knowledge, but have you seen the musical before?
I have. Yes, I did see it a handful of times, although truly, as we'll talk about it, like, it's not, the story is not my cup of tea, right? Like, it's just not. And so, I don't think I've seen it all the way through a bunch. I think I've seen bits and pieces when I worked at the theater. I'd pop in and out for some of my favorite songs, and just wasn't the most appealing to me.
That's fair. I will say that I have never seen Mean Girls live, which sounds crazy with as much as I love theater. And I love Mean Girls. But I think that this came out at such a time that this one is what, only not even a decade old?
Fairly new.
I want to say that, like, somewhere in the middle of all of it, I missed it. I missed this film. This stage show. It did not cross my mind. I've had friends that wouldn't seen it live before, and I was just like, oh, I'm thinking I'm going to sit this one out. Because just the idea of going to see a musical version of Mean Girls, just like, I felt like I was like, there's going to be something missing. There's going to be something that just, like, how do you capture what Mean Girls is perfectly in a stage show? Especially a decade later. So my only entry into the musical was the film last year, which is not the best take on musical films. Go see Wicked, everybody. That's better. But I mean, in your opinion, is the film a good take on the show? Because you saw them both before, so
yeah. So part of the problem, I think, is I just glanced at the date for the show. So the first performance of the show was 2017.
Ooh. 5 years ago. No, 7 years ago.
The movie to come out so soon after the show launched. I will say, even from the last time I saw the show to the show that we just saw, there are some big staging differences. There were some big character changes. And so I think when I even first saw it, truly, it must have just come out. I mean, it must have just, like, literally popped on tour, because it was pre-COVID. So, I don't know. And then the film, I mean, obviously, Renee Rapp, we love. She is the OG. And so, I think that kind of saved it gave it the clout that they wanted it to have. But I struggled with the movie. They made some substantial changes to the jokes specifically. And I think the feedback that I got from friends who are not particularly musical nerds was that, like, the jokes are why they came. And so when you take those out, it just lost a whole, it lost the attention, you know, in the theater. People were losing the ability to pay attention because everything that they were coming for, or thought they were coming for, they didn't get.
Sure. I did not know that Renee Rapp was the original until your sister told me last night. And I was like, no way. And she was like, yeah, she was the original Regina George on Broadway, which just feels crazy that she came back for that. And she did a great job of that. But I did like that now that I know that. And I do think I have to go watch that film again now that I've seen it live on stage. And this is one of your sister's favorites. I know that she was very excited about seeing it. I had talked to her on Instagram about it a few times. She ate that shit up last night. Where did this love of this musical begin for her? Do you know?
Totally random. Honestly, I think she saw it way back when I had seen it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Was her first exposure to it. I'm not sure that she's even seen the film, to be honest with you.
Okay.
The original film. And so there is definitely an alignment that she feels with the Katie character. I think in regards to kind of being like a bit of an outcast or the new person, because mm-hmm. she has jumped schools a couple of times. And she's also dealt with a lot of the themes that we see in the show that are a little bit deeper rooted when it comes to bullying and mm-hmm. Hard to make friendships and all the things that couldn't hike, right?
Like, sure.
I think she's really relates to many of those themes. And so to then kind of see that character become the center of the universe in this show, mm-hmm. we don't often get to see an underdog in such a very transparent way. Like, so clearly that, like, oh, here, let me introduce you to the underdog. You know mm-hmm. that by the end of this show, this person will no longer be the underdog. And just go from 0 to 100 very quickly. So I think that she enjoyed that. And, I mean, she's a musical theater nerd. So the songs themselves, I think she can sing them. And that always helps when you are really enjoying something. And you can relate to the character. So
I do think that what you stated there is very interesting, because I think that's probably why, and I didn't connect it till now, of why I loved the film so much as a teenager, was because, again, being the underdog, being somebody who was bullied for being smart, you know, and that was always kind of the outcast and used to eat lunch by himself sometimes. And we're not going to get into that. We don't need to. But like, there are these aspects of that. This is a real high school experience for a lot of people. Katie's experience is real to a lot of individuals. Getting to see that and then getting to kind of exaggerate that story a little bit is very appealing. And like, when your characters are relatable and you can see yourselves in them, you also see how they mess up sometimes, and that we're all human because we mess up. There is just an attractability to that character, and then therefore to the show. At least I would think so. So the story is very close to the original, having seen them all now. However, there are some changes that they made. Do you have... This is hard to ask you now, because I was going to ask you, how do you feel like this story was translated well to stage? But you're not very as familiar with the original story. But I guess, like, as a show, do you think that this is a good representation of what you think Mean Girls is at its core?
Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of the core pieces, at least that I remember from the movie, are brought into the show and highlighted, of course, as one does through music.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of, well, now we have a lot of contemporary musicals, but it is one of, I think at the time, it was one of a few contemporary musicals that is still kind of almost like a pop show, which yeah. makes it still feel authentic to the movie, because that is, it's exactly the type of music and themes that would probably be happening in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So
agreed.
Yeah.
I think that one of the changes that I liked the most, and I don't remember this about the movie, about the musical movie. Gosh, I have to make that clarification now. There's two movies. But I like that the show is actually narrated by Janice and Damien almost like they're telling the story of what happened to their friend Katie. And I thought that was really cool because it gives you like a, it gives you that frame, like that frame storytelling that I really love frame storytelling, but it also makes them like more like integrated into the, to the plot and the story a little bit more so that you almost feel like they're the main characters and we're, and like Katie and the plastics are a little more like, yeah, it's their story, but like, it's not their story. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause if you take that off, it, you kind of lose the supporting characters, right? I mean, we know that they are there. But particular, I mean, the comparison to the movie, especially, I think they're way more highlighted. In the stage work on.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they are in the original movie, but there are like a handful of scenes. Like they are not important because the narrator of the original film is Lindsay Lohan. It's her inner thoughts, her inner monologue. You know, she's kind of telling you the story. And how does that translate very well into a show? And granted, they do have some parts where they stop and they either like tell it, they tell some of the narrative through song, or they stop and they would freeze the moment and kind of explain what the character's thinking. But then you do have these moments where it's like Damien and Janice are like, this is what's going on in our school. These are the people. These are the, like, yes, is our friend. She's not really our friend towards the end. She becomes our friend. Like, there's these moments. And yes, they kind of float back into like being sidekicks to Katie. But I felt like this was Damien's show. Like, this is Damien's world. We're just all kind of part of it, you know? Which is really good because it gives you that, like, the quintessential, like, gay character up front that we don't always see in a lot of shows. You know, a lot of traditional Broadway shows, a gay actor might be playing a very straight role. And this is very much a very gay character having his moment. And I loved that aspect of it. And I thought that was a really cool update to Mean Girls.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, all of those added, I mean, there's a number of songs in the production that obviously are completely centered around the two of them. Yeah. We have them opening, closing the show basically, but I think Janice has got probably 3 to 4 just mega solos. And Damien has at least 2 to 3 that are truly just kind of basically his.
Absolutely. Do you like the story? Again, you're not a big comedy guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's grown on me. It's not my favorite. We'll be honest and say it's not my favorite. I think I struggle with the storyline because I can't relate to it at all.
Sure.
And I think that a lot of things that I enjoy, as most of us do, if we can relate to it, we really enjoy it. And this was not my high school experience. This was nobody that I know their high school experience. And then add that onto the fact that obviously there's exaggeration happening for the sake of comedy. And once again, comedy, not my strong suit. It's just a mixed bundle of things that I naturally would not find myself in the middle of. And so I can appreciate the show from a talent standpoint and for what it takes to be in it and do it and all of those details. But yeah, it's not one that I'm, you know, standing in line to see 30 times in a row.
Are you telling me that you weren't the popular kid that was just, like, ruling the school?
I mean, when you go to a high school where there's less than 300 people, I'm not sure. Like, people probably thought that they were ruling the school, but, like, there's only, your competition is 10 people. So it really wasn't. Just a different level. And of course, you know, we had uniforms or dress code and all of those pieces and chapel every day. So, you know, what you gotta do?
It's like you're looking over your kingdom, but it's actually just a village and it's all dying.
Yeah, I mean, my school was, you could see the whole school from the entryway. It's one hallway. Straight down. That was the entire school. So what are you ruling? I'm not really sure.
That's crazy to me because, you know, I went to a high school where there was three floors and there's two sections and you couldn't get to the third floor. Like, you had to go down to the second floor to go to the other part of the third floor because it wasn't connected. It was that big. So, like, for me, it's just like when you see, like, those lunchroom, like, the scene where they're talking about, like, the different places where to sit in the lunchroom. Like, that was my high school. That was 100% the – there was the table for the jocks and there was the table for the nerds. And granted, I kind of could go from table to table depending on what the year was. You know, there was the band nerds. And, like, there was lots of cliques. But I also – my graduating class – was originally 600 kids, I think. And I think by the time that we were down to 400. But, like, that was just our class. Like, we were a huge school. And so, like, for me, when I'm seeing this, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is the high school experience. What are you talking about? But you went to a one-room schoolhouse from in the country. No, I'm just kidding. But it's a very different experience.
Well, and and yet the same, right? So we talked about the cafeteria and we talked about the tables. Mm-hmm. That still existed, for sure. I will say I was a band nerd, shocker. I think the difference is that, and, like, God bless if anyone from my high school is listening to this, but the difference being, because it was so small, everyone... except maybe the athletes, but, like, everyone was in everything all the time. Mm-hmm. So you had the smart folks who were also in bands, who were also in cross country, who were also in, you know, all these other clubs. You had, it just, like, the overlap. There was so much overlap that then you had, I think, probably smaller groups of people, because whoever you were overlapping with the most is who you hung out with. Mm-hmm. Rather than, like, oh, the band kids are over here, and you know, God, we didn't have stoners or smokers, because God forbid. But, you know, the theology nerds are over here, and the jocks are over here.
No devil's
but
lettuce.
And, like, the jocks were also the lead in the school play because they could sing. You know, it was a little bit of the experience, I guess, but not to the extreme that it's portrayed.
You're describing the plot to High School Musical here.
Correct. I mean, it literally. Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. Do you feel when there was a new kid, did you have that, like, was it the Katie Heron effect of being, like, the whole school was just like, who is this new girl? Because we didn't get that in my school. Like, again, so many students, when someone new showed up, most of us didn't even notice that there was anybody new in the class.
Yes. So on the flip side, it was like a shockwave, right? When you only have 280 people across 9th through 12th grade, and to add to that, like, this is a feeder high school. So you have middle school and elementary schools who have been filtering students up through this program for the last 6 years. And so they've all been going to school together, well, 6 years for me, since kindergarten for them. So kindergarten through 12th grade, they've been going to school with the same kids. So when you add folks show up, you know, especially if it wasn't freshman year, if they showed up in your class in sophomore or junior or senior year, you were like, we have to know absolutely everything about this person. Who are they? Where did they come from? What do they want? What are they doing? Where are they going? Who are they seeing? How are they different? But also that's because nothing exciting happened at the school. So that was, like, the most exciting thing that could possibly happen, is getting a new kid.
Fair enough. So with that aspect of Mean Girls, I think that they did a really good job of capturing what made Mean Girls enjoyable. The original film, I do think that it was interesting that they did change quite a bit. I think there were some jokes that in Mean Girls you couldn't say now, if that makes sense, even though it wasn't that long ago. But like the one in my head was, I was waiting for the line where Karen's just like, if you're from Africa, why aren't you white? Because I was like, oh, you can't say it. Like that wouldn't come off the same way. And they didn't say that. And I thought, oh, that was actually interesting. They put in a different joke there, which just shows like how the show has adapted over time and how it's not the same show. And so I do appreciate that, because I think I got something different from the show this time than I did from watching Mean Girls growing up. And I think that's the big takeaway for me with this story. It's not your mama's Mean Girls.
Well, and there were some jokes where, I don't know, I'm just so curious to know who's in the room making those decisions. Because, like you said, some of them are taken out, but then I know at least one time, can't remember what the joke was, where I remember you audibly being like, oh, they said that. They said that joke. And
I
it
did.
Just, it didn't, you're like, maybe that one could have been, you know, whether it was the delivery or just the fact that it shouldn't have even been there.
There was a few jokes, and I don't remember specifically which one it was, because I was making a lot of audible gasps. But there were still a lot of jokes about, I think, specifically about women's weight. And then I was just like, ooh, like, I get, like, because part of the storyline is, like, giving Regina calcium bars to, like, make her put on weight. And, like, still, that's still a very questionable, like, storyline. I think in this day we can question a little bit more, and we can say that's kind of awful, which is what you're supposed to do. But there's, like, they got rid of the joke of being, like, when they're in the store and Rachel McAdams is like, do you have something bigger than the 7? And the lady's like, we're 5, 7, 9 or whatever. Why don't you go try Kohl's? Like, they got rid of those, but then they replaced it with like other lines of just being like, women are supposed to be skinny to be attractive. And I just thought it was odd, especially because there was quite a few people on stage that weren't like, they weren't what you would say are like the skinny model body type, but they were absolutely gorgeous. And I'm like, what is this? Like, the message was getting a little bit confused then. I'm like, I know we're not supposed to believe that skinny is beautiful, but then why are we still laning some of those jokes? Why are we still trying to get people to laugh at some of those jokes? That felt icky. I think that there was one, I can't think of what the joke was, but it hit. And I was like, that is the wrong joke to have kept out of everything. We should have replaced that one.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think it was at the Halloween party, and I can't remember exactly who it was.
Yeah.
But then in the same breath, it was interesting to me, because I don't remember it from the first time I saw the show, where they were talking about, Karen is talking about sending nudes.
Yes.
And... you know, saying that she did it, and then that we shared it, and honestly, I can't remember if that's in the movie or not, or what that looks like, but from the first time, and once again, it's been a minute since I've seen the show, so she could have said it the first time, but in last night's performance, there's this pause, because I think they still wanted a laugh, because as we know, Karen's character is a little bit spacey,
mm-hmm.
supposed to be just over the top, just irregular, mm-hmm. but for her to then pull out this line of, you know, why do we think that this is okay?
Yes,
this should not be okay for boys to do, and which it was very interesting to me to then see the audience's reaction, because I'm not sure that anyone thought that was going to happen. And then everyone kind of thought for a minute, and then they decided to cheer or clap or respond. And I don't know. Maybe my memory is going. I mean, we know that it is, but
I will say with that scene
different moment.
I was gonna say with that scene specifically, I think at least why I had a pause was because it almost felt like the actress was breaking character to say that line, because it didn't sound like Karen, but it was also something that was literally like, yeah, you're right. Why do guys do that? And like, it was like that moment of being like, wait, Karen's actually smart. I think that's what stumbled people for a moment. But yeah, like that is something that, yeah, you're right. 100%. But then they still put in the things like, at the Halloween party, as she's getting pulled away, she's talking about the joke is that she wants to sleep with her first cousin in the movie, and they put that in there. They kept that in there. And I'm just like, why did you make that choice? Like, what is it? What was it about that joke that you were like, that's funny, we should keep that in?
Well, and yeah, and it truly just makes me wonder, like, is it the fandom? Is it, you know, I know it's comedy. I know it's over the top, and I do struggle. I think this is why I struggle with comedy in general, is because I listen to comedians and I hear them cross these lines, and it's in the name of comedy. And this whole play, obviously, in the name of comedy. I just, the gray area between what is acceptable comedy and what's not, like, if I'm going to say this joke is okay, but then I say that this other joke isn't okay, well, why? Which, once again, this is a whole rabbit hole. But I think that that is part of this, why we've seen so much switching and changing for this musical, especially, because the same thing happened in the new revamp of the movie, where they took out a lot of the original lines and people were disappointed. But if you had kept them in, someone was bound to be, you know, find it offensive. So where's the median on that?
I do think that sometimes it speaks to, like, we talked about this with, like, Mrs. Doubtfire, being like, would that movie be made today? Probably not. It was a product of its time. And, like, 100%, you could tell that the Mean Girls that we had as in my adolescence and the Mean Girls that we have on stage are very much products of their time. And I think I even turned to you during an admission and I said, this is really young skewed. And I think I was starting to feel old in that moment. I was like, oh my God, are my bones cracking? Is my hip about to pop out of place here? Because it wasn't my Mean Girls, but it was the Mean Girls that, like, people growing up now or who are younger, like your sister, she's a decade younger than us. Like, this is the story that she needed it to be. Like, I is that the right wording? You know, it's like, it's not the story that we needed when we were in high school, but it's the story that so many people like her age needed when they were in high school.
Yeah. I think, and once, like you said, like, generational differences, all of our expectations are different too. Like, whether the experiences are different or the same, what I deem as acceptable for sure is more than what my mom deems as acceptable. And then what Becca deems as acceptable is different than what I deem as acceptable, in more than just comedy. So yeah, it's definitely this, you know, you have to, in shows such as this one, where it is such a distinct time, it's capturing such a distinct time and experience. It's very hard to translate that without making a lot of changes so that the next gen can appreciate it just as much.
I think that a perfect example of this is the lion scene, which I do want to talk about real quick. There's, during one of the musical numbers, after we find out that Regina George is having cheating on her boyfriend inside a mascot suit, the mascot comes out. And there is some stuff going on in that suit, all right. And there was the four of us. And just to set the scene for everybody, it was RJ, his sister, me, and then our friend Marty. And my hand went over my mouth because I just could not believe that we were seeing this. RJ and Marty both, like, turned their eyes, like, just like it was really hard to kind of watch. And then your sister was laughing through it, like, and I just thought in the head, I was like, this is the perfect example of, like, that a comedy appealed to somebody who was younger, but we got to the point where we're just like, oh no, what are we watching? Like, what is going on stage right now? And, like, I couldn't stop watching, but I just couldn't believe I was seeing that. And the two of you were just like, you were like, oh, this is so cringe, and, like, turned your heads away. But, like, that, I think it sums up kind of Mean Girls of what was going on the stage very well for the different generations of people that were there. Like, could you imagine taking your mom to this?
I mean, she did. She had seen it.
Okay.
She went when we, and there's a reason that she chose not to come last night. and there it is, right? Like, there, that is the draw of who wanted to come and see the show again versus someone who's already seen it and said, you know what? I'm good. I don't need to. I've seen it, been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I need.
Was there anything about the show, I guess about the story, that you thought was impressive? Or like the stage, like the staging of it? You know, we're going to talk about the music and the dancing in a second, but I will say this. I thought the bus was kind of cool because I wasn't expecting them to have a bus. I thought it was going to be like implied that Regina and George got hit by a bus. And then when they pulled back
light and
yes. And then when they pulled back that screen and the bus was coming at us, I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. I wasn't expecting that at all.
Yeah. Well, and even since last time I saw it, I think there were some substantial set piece changes, which was kind of shocking to me because, once again, it wasn't that long ago. But the bus, obviously, like, I mean, it's just monumental. I will say I was a little bit sad. The opening scene before had... had like safari feel instead of just like an empty stage. And I'm sure it's just because it's a whole lot of quick changes. It's a whole lot of, you know, if you have a limited cast.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt different. That opening number as basically just a solo kind of felt, with an empty stage, felt a little bit different.
Yeah, it felt like there was a piece missing. I was almost expecting it to open up like a child's version of Lion King. Again, I've never seen Lion King, as you found out this week, on stage. But I was expecting something like that, just like some kind of animals to like represent like her being in Africa, and like they talked about her being around elephants, and they talked about her being around lions, and like there was none of that. And I thought, oh, that's an interesting choice because it just feels that felt a little hollow, you know?
Yeah. But I thought the lighting was very well done. I thought the set pieces that they did have were appropriate. I remember from the first time I saw it, the first time seeing them roll out on those desks. Very, very fun and different. And I'm sure shows since then have probably copied it. But I appreciate, you know, creative ways of making scenes change and make you feel like you're in a different place in a very short amount of time.
It reminded me of the wheelie things from Some Like It Hot. That like,
yes, that is what I was thinking of. I was like, we recently saw something with wheels. That's what it was.
It looks like fun. Like when they're rolling in and out, they look like they're just enjoying themselves. And I'm like, I want to have a desk to roll up in and out of. Like, I don't want to be in high school again, but like, give me that desk. Because it was a cool.
Like, I just want to, you know, roll down the street.
100%.
Desk.
I will say that I think one of the cool things about that first scene when they roll on the desk too is I liked how they switched out the students with the teachers, and it almost was so flawless that you didn't even notice that the students were dressed as the teachers and that they just like switched in and switched out. And like, I thought that was a really cool way of like utilizing your cast really well. Like, you had this multiple roles, but like it felt flawless.
Well, and I'll say the same thing for act two. I did not realize first time around seeing it that they have all of the men dress up as women for that scene, which makes sense. I mean, once again, you have a limited ensemble and you have some choreography that requires some upper body strength. So why not take advantage of, you know, throwing some wigs on some guys, and really you only see their backside, so it's pretty it does exactly what they wanted to do.
There was one that Mari and I could not get over because he was eating the roll up and he just loved it. He was like getting so into like the exaggerated movements and running around the stage, and we were giggling like children at this. Like, we just were following around stage, and he loved it. And like, it was a really cool effect because, again, you don't notice it, but like, you're right, some of those scenes of like when trust falls, that was a great way to have like to make sure like you have extra people that are going to make sure that these people aren't falling on their ass on stage and looking caught off guard,
right? And honestly, part of me was wondering if there was, because at one point, I think at the beginning of Act Two, so not like, or through Act Two, I think there was an individual that maybe was either a trans woman or playing a trans woman intentionally.
Okay.
Honestly, not quite sure. Because the rest of the cast that was cross-dressing only came on for that those truckball scenes. Because that is something that I just, as we know, I have the ability to just kind of naturally track immediately.
Sure.
Or maybe I'm just, I don't know, there's vibes and I'm immediately drawn to it. But I'm wondering if that's the same person.
Okay. That would be interesting to know. If anybody's in the production of this, let us know just so we can have some more information about it. But also, there was a great representation on the stage, too. There was tall, there was short, there was every ethnicity. We had every colored skin. We had, like, you know, there was just such a great makeup. There was clearly some queer people. There was clearly, you know, some straight people. Like, I loved that. It felt very representative of, like, this is what a student body should be. And it wasn't just all, like the first film is very, like, the original film with Lindsay Lohan is very white. Like, cisgendered white females. There's a few characters, but they're, like, literally, like, the girls in the background being, like, you slept with the coach. And, like there wasn't much to it other than very, very vanilla. And this was not like that. This was, like, the cast was very diverse, and I do appreciate that they did make some of those changes and or it seemed like it was more intentional that they were making choices to be more representative. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. Hold on. Don't mind me while I quickly let my dog out of my office here, because you can probably hear him this entire time going crazy.
He's just trying to escape.
Yeah, he's like, all right, enough about Mean Girls. but yeah, immediately, same thing. I noticed just a variety of bodies on the stage, which just Broadway, I think, is leading the world when it comes to being inclusive and no longer requiring or having this, like, even ableistic thought process when it comes to being in theater and acting and dancing and singing. I think it was so refined previously, like, you had to be super fit, you had to be able to do all of these things, and now we're moving into a space where it's like, you can be an insanely talented actor, an insanely talented singer, and maybe you're just not able to keep up with the dancing. Maybe you have a disability. Maybe, you know, all of these things. But we can still bring you onto the stage and show off all of the talents that you do have. And the same thing, too, when you were talking about kind of the cis white movie that we had. Like, that's not the that is not representative of the average high school, right? Especially in today's time. So I think it's good that they kind of, you know, whether that was intentional or not, who knows, but it was exciting to see.
And I think that even, I do wonder about the intentionality, but there was some intentionality in some of their choices, like, Regina's not blonde, and, like, they made her brunette, which is interesting because they were all pretty much blonde in the original film, you know, and, like, there was, like, I felt like that was a clear choice, and you were making a statement there of, like, the standard beauty has changed, and it's different, or it's more representative of everybody, because they easily could have thrown a blonde wig on her. I'm pretty sure that that wig that she had was a wig. Like, I do not think that was her natural hair.
Yeah, and I think it goes to show again that who knows the and the reasons why they're made, but the mean people don't always look like a blonde, blue eyed, super twig thin, you know, model status. Obviously, there are dress codes in which all of those people fall under there, right? Like we do have Karen there who is exactly, but yeah, so it's a variety of life.
Right.
It's fun to see too, because it tells you that you don't have to stay and within the confines of what everyone has done before for it to still be equally great.
100%. So, of course, we can't talk about Mean Girls the musical without talking about the music. Again, I was not super familiar with the music. I've seen the musical film. There's a few songs that stuck out to me, a few that I was looking forward to. Why is it that Janice is just like the role of Janice is just a powerhouse? And I just want to give so much props to Alexis Moriarty. I'm going to butcher that last name. I'm so sorry. Alexis Mora. That's probably how you say it. But like, she killed it. Like there was not a song that Janice was not singing that was just not like memorable, top notch, one of the best songs of the show. And again, I think that goes back to Janice being kind of this narrative person, kind of it being part of her show. But who stood out to you in this production?
I mean, echo everything that you just said. Janice is, from a movie standpoint, from a stage standpoint, it's my favorite character in the show for sure. But the fact that her songs are just badass, right? Like everything about them, not just because the character is just this gives no flying whatevers, but also the talent that it takes. And I was mentioning this last night, like I've seen so many folks play this role and then go on to play other powerhouse roles, similarly in shows like Heathers, in shows like Wicked. Like, literally, you just see them one after the other because the vocal skills that these particular songs take are so insane. And it was super fun to watch Alexis perform these because, of course, we were relatively close to the stage, and she really comes for a lot of the songs to the tip of the stage. And as a vocalist, it was fun to kind of watch her effortlessly kind of change and shift through her vocal registers, because just popping in and out is clear as a bell. And a lot of the songs have like a powerhouse hold at the end of them, just holding that note forever and ever and ever, full power. I mean, she probably could have lit up that theater without a microphone on. She was belting it. So it definitely, yeah, I could go on forever. And she just like, she is the person that I would have, and once again, we talk about relatability. She is the person that I would have wanted to be friends with in high school. Like, she is that cool art kid. And honestly, I did have friends, cool art friends. So I definitely can relate on that level. But of course, you know, we have World Burn, everybody's fave with Regina. And the way they did that staging wise, very cool. But yeah, I mean, those are probably the most notable songs for me, aside from, of course, Damien and his tap number. Because it's so out of place, but also exactly where it should be. But it's out of place regarding, like, oh, this is a very contemporary, you know, less than decade-old musical. And we're just, it's not even a little, it gives me Book of Mormon.
Yes.
It is, what's it called? The light song. Light bulb.
I've only seen that light musical switch. Once.
Turn it off. That's what it is. it is the equivalency to turn it off, down to even kind of how the song comes to fruition, starting with him breaking into an ensemble and then coming back. So, yeah, but hats off to that entire cast members.
Yeah, Joshua Morrissey did a fantastic job as Damien. Like, there wasn't a song that he performed or a number he did that was just not, like, chef's kiss. It was, like, I always loved Damien, but, like, this was a perfect Damien. What I love about the show is that everybody has such a distinct way. Like, their characterization in the songs have distinctness to them. Janice is very much her I don't care attitude comes through in her music of just being, like, you know, sticking the middle finger up to the world and, like, Apex Predator and... Katie is very much like the cutesy girl next door, don't know quite what I'm doing. Like, it's like traditional Rachel Berry vibes, you know. And Regina is very sexy in the way she sings. It's very, kind of deep. It's kind of like, ooh, like almost like Marilyn Monroe-esque, but deeper than that, if that makes sense. Like, you're just like, you're trying to be the sexy queen of the school, you know. Like, there's... And then, like, Damien is very fun, and he's very, you know, he's very powerful, but very fun. And then you have Karen, who is, like, fun, but in a very, like, flighty way, and her music reflects it. Like, everyone has such a distinct voice, which sometimes when you have these musical numbers and shows, they sometimes sound the same. You know, Love Hamilton, a lot of the numbers sound the same, you know? But everyone had such a distinct musicality to them that I thought was very interesting that you don't see in a lot of traditional musicals.
Yeah, and I'll just give a shout out to Gretchen, Kristen.
Kristen Amanda Smith, we love you.
Yeah, just also, I mean, even though her solos, they're relatively limited, the acting, I mean, her vocals were insane, but her acting was so... on point, even when you weren't paying attention to her. The facial expressions and just, yeah, her maneuvering of that role, because it is, as we know, it's a pivotal one. But yeah, and just super, super fun to watch. So just a shout out there.
Absolutely. So final question for you, sir. Rewatchability. Is this a show that you would go see again and again?
I mean, as we know, I've seen it before, and I did go see it again. Truly, it's one of those ones where, at this point, because I've seen it a few times, I know most exactly what to expect. So, I would say that I would go and see it every so often. And it's not something that I feel like I need to see every single all the time, but it's entertaining enough that I feel like I would go see it if the opportunity arose.
Absolutely. I think that it's one of those ones that I would enjoy more seeing with people that maybe who haven't seen it before, to kind of get their reactions, to kind of get their feelings. But it's not one that I would probably seek out every single time it came into the city, but it's definitely one that I would probably, every once in a while, when you just want an enjoyable show that you don't have to think much about, this is that kind of show. You know, you just kind of turn it on, you go to see it, you shut your mind off, you laugh, and then you walk away. Like, is it going to change the musical landscape? No. But is it going to be a fun time? Absolutely. And that's what theater's about.
Yeah. I mean, truly, if you're a Tina Fey fan, this is, as we know, she made it, she wrote it, she did all the things. This is for you.
This is her baby. So before we go real quick, we just want to give a thanks to Fifen for our headphones, which RJ is currently rocking. We are going to be testing them and reviewing them and stuff like that, but we always appreciate our equipment upgrades, and we're going to be working really close with them. So stay tuned for more information about them. And thank you for listening to another episode of The Cosmic Curtain, the official podcast of Cosmic Circus Broadway. If you're interested in finding us outside of our box seats, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to us at Boxy Babes or at My Cosmic Circus. I'm Brian Kitson, and joining me, of course, is RJ Miller-Zelenko. So thank you so much, and until our next curtain call.